Hi, you all. For those of you who don't know me, but I think I know everybody here, except Jill. I'm not sure what your last name is or where your agency is. Where are you calling in from? Are you here?
Hi, it's Jillian, actually. Just a sec. I'm sorry. I'm just a little delayed here.
Canada. Setting...
Yeah. Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah. So welcome, everyone. I'm Lisa, the Chief Program Officer, and we are a small group today. We had 10 people registered, but a few had to drop out. They all want the recording. So Teresa, that's good for you, you know, because we wanted you to talk about your program for us. So I'm glad you're going to, and they'll still listen. I am lucky that I get to work with Marissa, who happens to be Marissa Gordon from Ruth Rails, JFS at Home. And I was just in Boca Raton, as it were, but missed her. And we decided that next time I will make sure I get to see a tour of the place. But I did get to see your agency, which was quite exciting and quite large. And there's a lot going on and people are coming back. And I guess that's the way it is with everyone. And she's the chair. There you go. Take it away, Marissa.
Well, hi, it's nice to see you all again. Things are always changing, yet staying the same. We have a lot that we like to talk about, but we're lucky today to have Teresa Baldwin with us from the JFS of Richmond, Virginia. She's the Director of Human Resources and Volunteer Services, and I believe Teresa wants to share with us some training that they provide, I think, for caregivers, right, Teresa?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So I think we'll start with your training, and we'll take it from there. So.
Great. Thank you so much.
Everyone, I guess you can mute yourselves and let Teresa have the floor.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Teresa Baldwin. I am the Director of Human Resources and Volunteer Services at JFS in Richmond. And I'm talking to you about, or want to talk to you about our PCA school that we put in place for our home care department. And those of you that have a home care department know the struggles of recruitment and retention of home care aides. It's always been a struggle. And so, you know, and with the population of the elderly needing services, the demand is even greater. So a few years ago, JFS was able to provide some PCA training with the help of a grant from United Way. And at first we did charge a small fee for the students to participate in the class. Of course, any class has to meet the state standards. So our nurses worked with the Department of Nursing to ensure that the curriculum that we developed met those standards. And of course, over the years, it has changed a little bit. And we were fortunate enough to partner with some local foundations and some local contributors who had an emphasis on education. And they have made some substantial contributions to this program. So we kind of have two different grants going on. One is specifically working with a certain population, and we're working with our Richmond housing redevelopment. So we're working with the group of people to identify those who may not have had educational opportunities in the past, living in that area, and bringing that education to them. Once we first started it, we actually were able to have the classes face-to-face in their neighborhood, the local Boys and Girls Club. So they would come in and we provided transportation if they needed it, daycare, just helping them overcome some of those barriers in order to participate in the class. And then of course COVID hit and things changed. And we put it on hold for quite some time, and then we realized we need to think what we're going to do, because this COVID thing just doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. So we've kind of revamped how we look at it. We're doing most of it. We're doing a hybrid model where most of the students. Actually, now with the grants and everything, this is a free program for the students. Of course, in order for them to receive the certification from us, they do contract, sign a contract that they will work with us for so many hours after graduation, before we will release that certificate to them, because, hey, we're training you. We want you to be able to work for us for, some time. So recently we started a hybrid model where the students are taking some modules online. We're partnering with Care Academy. Don't know if you guys are familiar with Care Academy. And I think each state is different as far as the requirements. So they're very good about working with you about setting up that curriculum and what that looks like. So our students are able to complete those modules and, you know, test out on certain things. But we also felt that that face-to-face, that hands-on training was still an important component that we did not want to sacrifice. So we were able to provide small group instruction a couple days a week, so that they can come in and get that hands-on instruction and practice and assistance with anything that they needed. Like I said, we had two different classes going on. One is a more for folks who might need a little more assistance. And with that class, even though our requirements for the state is only 40 hours, with this particular group, we're also offering, you know, we're putting in some workforce development programs. So we have somebody coming in to teach them about work ethic and, you know, what it is to be a good employee, being punctual, making sure you report to your shift, and what to do in case something happens and how to respond to those situations. We've gotten a lot of great feedback on that. They really enjoyed that interaction and learning those tools. And then with the other hybrid class is a little more self-sufficient. We only have in-person sessions like maybe once every other week where they can come in. They're a little bit more independent. So kind of have two different ones going on. But we have found, you know, it's still a challenge to recruit. We still don't have, we're not maxed out, but any number, we have 6 in one and 4 in another. So right now we have 10 that are graduating. One is graduating on the April 16th and then April 29th. So we'll be adding those to our pool of caregivers. So we're excited about that. And also just, we are proud of the opportunity to provide this education to someone who may not have had the opportunity before, able to provide resources for them to help them overcome some of the obstacles that they face. It's just heartwarming to see them when they graduate. We do a formal graduation for them where they have temporary certificates, flowers, they can invite family members. Of course, we're going to limit it this year. And we have, you know, food available and things of that nature. So it provides them an opportunity to celebrate something that they were able to accomplish. So we're very proud of it. It is a very rewarding program. I can say that it is not always easy to find those people to do the program. But when you find a couple, it's great. We've had one, I think she was from our first class from several years ago. I was on call one weekend, and I think it was the weekend when Kenny Rogers had passed away. And she called to tell me that her client loved Kenny Rogers. So the next shift, she brought in her guitar and cowboy hat and played music for her. So just one like that is such a success. So we're happy to do it. If you have any questions on how to get it started, I will assist you with what I know or put you in touch with the people that would be able to help you. But Care Academy is a great resource, I feel. And I don't know if we have a partnership or if you guys have a partnership with them, But it's a, you know, from all of the other online programs we looked at, we felt that it was the most robust and the most affordable program. But again, we do enhance it with face-to-face. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Teresa. That's wonderful. Actually, there's a nonprofit organization in Boca Raton where we are that's called Boca Helping Hands. And they do a lot for the community. And one of the things they have is a training program for HHAs and actually CNAs. And, you know, in the new reality with all of these, you know, shortages, they're reaching out. And I'm one of the lucky ones that they want to partner with. So we're going to partner with them. And it's very similar what they do. They also focus on workforce development, which is like the skills, the interview skills, the professional. They actually also incorporate financial literacy, which is so important because I think they're pulling from the same demographics and the same people, the same types of issues that your agency does. And it's great. And it's a mitzvah. It's really part of what we do because you're helping people to learn to help themselves. And it's right. Wonderful.
You're upskilling. You're upskilling.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Teaching them to fish, right?
Yes.
So, there is, I'm sure for those who are interested, and you mentioned, I mean, state to state, the requirements vary, but I know, like you mentioned, Care Academy and others, they aim to do the research and have more like universal curriculum that they know spans across states that will allow you to meet the criteria. So I don't know, I want to obviously open the floor up for questions, but one thing I would, if there's time in our meeting today, to just touch on a little bit of the steps of the process you take. If you're interested in this, how do you find out what the requirements are? And so you became accredited. Like, in other words, you established yourselves as a training program, and that's the curriculum that you use through Care Academy, right?
Yeah, well, originally, before COVID, we had our own curriculum that we had accredited by the state, and our nurses helped develop that. With the help of that agency. So we had our own that was, you know, face to face. But when we went to virtual, we didn't have the capacity to create our own virtual program, or we didn't know how to do that. So we just reached out to an agency that was, or a company that was already providing that service. So we just tagged on to that.
And is there like an annual renewal process where they have to reevaluate your program all the time to keep it accredited?
I don't think so. I would have to follow up with the nurses on that. I'm not really sure. I'm sure that Care Academy probably has to do some sort of verification. I mean, I know that they stay on top of the requirements and make any changes that are necessary.
Okay. So as long as you're showing that you use an already accredited program, that's what they rely on. And that's
yes, awesome.
Absolutely. It takes the pressure off of you because you trust mm-hmm. them to stay compliant.
Yes, because we're not using our program anymore right, so much, other than right. some skills-based things that we are doing. Which is in addition to the 40 hours that they're doing online.
So I think, Lisa, did you put some questions
in? Yeah, I put two questions in.
Yeah.
How long do you ask them to work with you after they graduate?
My goodness. It's 3 months.
That's it?
Or full time for 3 months. So
yeah.
What is that?
Lisa, you'd be surprised. That's very realistic because It's a very free open market, and you can't really get people you can't tie them down because the offers come in and they have to be free to choose for themselves what works.
Wow.
You might not always have the agency to offer
that. You invest so much for 3 months. I'm sorry.
As an agency, I think everyone would agree, you might not have the case to offer them that they're available for. So it's a two-way street. You might want them, but you might not have what they can do.
Yeah, and a lot of our aides work at multiple organizations or agencies so that they can get the hours, the 40 hours, because like you said, we're not always able to offer that based upon their availability or location. And you know, the research shows if you can keep them for 90 days, you got them for at least 2 years. So those first 90 days, we do what we can to keep them. You know, their first visit with a client, we have somebody going out there with them so they're not alone, to kind of help mentor them through that. I wouldn't say that they're there for the whole day, but just for, you know, the introduction and, you know, part of the shift that they're there to help mentor them through that. We do touch points. How did your first shift go? Did you have any problems? How was the ClearCare system? Did you have all the information you needed on the client? And then we do a 2-week touch point. And then again, another 2 weeks touch point, just checking in on them. You know, and I think the more you can reach out to them, the more touch points.
You need to go for coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, like Dr. Will.
These are quick phone calls or emails.
We have some questions. Yeah, well, you were going to say
something.
Tatiana has her hands up, and I know that Will wanted to speak.
And Dr. Will has his hand up, yeah.
Just to clarify about the certificate, then the certificate is given by Care Academy or by the GFS Richmond. What does it say on the actual document?
Yes, we haven't had anybody graduate from Care Academy, but it's going to be the Care Academy is going to release it to us. So it's going to have Care Academy on it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yes. So it's their certificate. Okay. Got it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And one of the questions is how much does it cost to take the class? Because this is grant funded. We are not charging anyone for the class, but we do have a contract saying that, you know, it is a value of this, you know, X number of dollars. If you do not complete the class, or if you want, you know, we will charge you X amount of dollars. But I don't think that we ever really enforce that.
No.
If somebody wanted their certificate before the 3 months, we would ask that they pay for it. Yes.
Dr. Will, you want
to? Yes, I didn't really have much of a question, just a statement. I think we guys are talking about the hours when I was administrator over a smaller agency in Northern Virginia. It was free and it was a great resource. And basically the minimum commitment was 300 hours. So, I mean, that's pretty in line. Mm-hmm. I just wish I could take advantage of it. Maryland, we don't have those programs. I just want to make a statement. Anybody who can take advantage of it, I've seen the benefits. I could kind of back you up there, but I wish we could take advantage of that here.
Care Academy doesn't offer the Maryland.
Just like PCA classes, like the allowance of an agency to create their own program and basically produce their own work staff. Now, Maryland's pretty set. I mean, there's great amount of classes and schools and things of that nature across the state, but like we Premier couldn't set up shop in the room right there and create our own caregivers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it a state grant, Teresa? What type of grant is supporting this for your agency?
Well, originally, United Way had donated some money toward the program. And like I said before, now it is funded by some local foundations and individual or family donations that really kind of have that focus on education. So we were able to procure those funds.
How do you recruit? How do you recruit for that program? Do you do the recruitment?
Well, we do two different, like I said, we have two different programs going on. We work with the community resource workers that work at the Richmond Redevelopment Housing Authorities. And we ask them, hey, who might benefit from this program and who do you think would be a good caregiver? And we, you know, we give them what we're looking for and they reach out to those individuals that they feel would meet the requirements. And then we bring them in for interviews or we go there. Last on the East End, we went to them for the interviews. We worked with the Boys and Girls Club and had them come in for that interview process. And then for the other program, which is a little more independent, We just recruit by word of mouth. We have reached out to other nonprofits. I know that there's some nonprofit here that has a waiting list. So we offered, hey, let us, we're partnering with them. Let us help you train these folks. So so the recruitment part is not that difficult, especially since we're partnering with the community resource people, and they've done a large part of that for us.
Okay. And how many times a year do you do this?
We have done it previously before COVID several times. Again, we have one in the East End and one local. So we'd have kind of two going on. We hope to do it at least 4 times. That's our goal.
Per year?
Per year.
That's great. Mm-hmm. 4 times per year. Yeah.
Yes. So that's our goal. We just started back again recently. So like I said, we haven't had anybody graduate. I can't say that. We had a group graduate from we started out small with a CARE Academy. I think we had 4 people, 4 graduates.
So
back in January.
So small groups, you're saying small groups. So let's say 4 times a year, you know, approximately how many people will go through that program per year?
So our goal, because our requirements by state is the most that can attend at any one time is 10, unless you have a co-instructor, and then you can have up to 14 students. Prior to COVID, we were able to meet that 14. Right now we are struggling a little bit. We only have, like I said, 6 in one group. And then in the other group, we have 4.
Yeah.
So we're not maxed out, but this is the first time, you know, we're just starting out.
Yeah.
But we have 10 potential caregivers coming on board at the end of April.
Have the caregivers, have these students, I should say, shared with you during interview processes, like what their alternative choices would be if this wasn't available, what they were thinking of doing for work? Because I know that wage is a very major consideration going into something, you know, especially even for people who were not working and now going to re-enter the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Good question. I don't think that was part of our previous conversation during the interview process. I know that when we first began working with the Richmond Redevelopment Housing Authority, our students had a lot of obstacles, some that we didn't even realize, you know, that would be barriers until we lived it. You know, a lot of transportation issues, childcare issues, even family members sometimes putting up barriers, the ones that were going to watch the kids all of a sudden can't watch the kids. Some family members getting mad at them for attending a class to want to get that certification. So I think for them, the big pull is them being able to complete something and earn a certificate and to, you know, start a career. Because part of the grant funding does provide additional funding for them to complete this DNA program, but they have to, you know, work with us for a year and so many hours before they're eligible to participate in that CNA program. But going back to your question, I don't know that I really know what other options or choices they had considered before entering, but it is a tight market, especially, you know, and we serve Medicaid clients, so we're kind of limited in what we can pay our caregivers. Otherwise we would be in the hole.
Right.
So we're struggling with that.
Tough situation. Yeah.
It is. And we've had.
I was thinking maybe if people learn about your agency for the first time through participation in this mm-hmm. program, perhaps they're also then going on to maybe benefiting from some other programs that your JFS provides that are appropriate for them and their families.
I can't say that we've had much crossover. Maybe some we've had a couple enter our counseling program. But actually one of our PCAs right now adopted her daughter through our adoption program years ago. So there's a little bit of crossover, but very rarely. But we offer, the programs that we offer is, you know, counseling, care management, public guardianship, adoption, foster care. So a lot of the programs really wouldn't pertain to what they need.
Right. Well, maybe the counseling. Yeah. I guess the counseling for family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tatiana has a question.
Again, to clarify on the number of hours you mentioned, it's 40 hours. It's 40 hours in total, including online and in person.
No, it's 40 hours online, and then we do additional hours to provide that face-to-face skills.
Right.
And the other program, we also provide that workforce development time.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. And for the skill development, like sort of hands-on, like how many hours do you think it's enough?
Well, with our East End group, they have to go 2 hours a week. I'm sorry, 2 hours, two times a week. So 4 hours for, I wouldn't say they have to do it for the whole 8 weeks, probably for 6 weeks.
That's good.
We just feel it's so important. And I think they appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
You've never done it before and you don't know how to transfer somebody and you've only watched it on TV, that doesn't do you a lot of good. So we really want to provide those skills and make sure that we're producing qualified PCAs, because we're sending them out there to work with, you know, our clients and, you know, so we feel like they need that.
Do you have a person in charge of this program? Because it seems like a lot of nuances that you have to manage, especially when it comes to the barriers that students face. For me, it even sounds like a case manager's social worker piece here. So do you have like that one person in charge of the program doing so many things?
Yeah, well, it is a group effort, that's for sure. And you know, it really depends upon what the need is. We have a nurse that kind of oversees the curriculum and does the face-to-face skills training. My assistant kind of touches base with them, you know, monitors their modules online to see how they're doing. If she sees someone is falling behind, she will reach out to them to find out what's going on, what's happening. We just had a lady who has not been able to make it to the face-to-face because of domestic violence issues that she's facing right now. So we linked her to some resources. We're letting her to continue the modules. And then when we start our next class, she will attend the face-to-face then. She just needs a little extra time to get her life in order. And so she feels safe and comfortable. And then of course, depending upon the need, other people may have to get involved and provide assistance, but it is a group effort. Nobody can handle all of that at once. And if we have another need, we go to our chief impact officer and say, hey, you know, we're having some issues with access to technology. The grant was able to supply us with some electronic devices that we can check out to the participants so that they can have a means to complete the online modules. So,
Teresa, how large is your home care, you know, program?
In what aspect?
In the number of clients that you're serving.
I have that number right here. We just had a meeting and I got to find it. Yeah, we have about right now on our roster, as far as caregivers, we have 85 caregivers but only 65 are actively working. So we're in the process of finding out, hey, where are you? What's going on? Where did you go? Why?
Does that mean you have 65 clients or
No, we do not. We currently have, let's see, 64 clients.
Uh-huh. And 65 caregivers, that's good.
We are down a little bit in our numbers on clients. And we are getting clients in a different location than we had before. So we're trying to up our recruitment for caregivers in that area. Because as another barrier, you know, our caregivers are not as willing to travel as far these days with the gas
prices. Especially with the gas prices. That's
a big issue, I'm sure.
So, you know, we can't, we have these two great cases, but if they're on the southwest side, nobody lives anywhere near them. It's hard to match up everything. There's so many different pieces of the puzzle that have to go together. We're looking at incentivizing or offering gas cards and things of that nature. We're looking at it. We're just talking about it. We haven't implemented
any smart idea.
And we want to do it on a temporary basis. It's not something that we can dive into and make a permanent commitment to, but definitely something in the interim because we know it's so hard for them.
You know, I'm thinking about Jessa. I was just going to say about Jessa, and then Tatiana, I guess, has another question. I don't know if Tricia or Jillian have anything.
Jillian also has a question.
Oh, terrific. Let me just ask Dr. Will something while we're talking about all of this. Like, Jessa has lots of clients across different states, right?
Depending on the program, if we're just talking about the home care arm, we just operate in Montgomery County. We have 103 clients. About 11,000 hours per month and about 143 caregivers. So, but if you're talking about different, there's like five different departments of JESSA, our mental health or seniors.
No, let's just talk about home care.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's right now just Maryland and Montgomery County.
Interesting. Okay, I thought you guys were all over. And then I was thinking, how hard is that?
That would be hard.
Montgomery is big enough. Sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Jillian, you said Jillian has something to say, Marissa? I'm sorry.
Yes. Hi. Well, it's just, I was just kind of in my head, just listening to you, Teresa, saying that you've got 65 workers, I think you said, and about 65 clients. And then I'm thinking, wow. And then with Jessa as well, it's sort of a different ratio than we have. We have about 300 clients and we have about 70 workers. So obviously this has to do with the amount of care, I think. But either way, I'm just kind of curious, you've got four times a year, this program, let's say five to 10 people per program. So you're looking at between, 25 and 40 participants. So how do you find the work? Like, how do you ensure you've got the work for those workers, given the contract you're providing or requiring?
Oh, that's an excellent point. Like I said, we are down on clients a little bit. The holiday season, I don't know if you guys experienced this around December or January. We had several clients pass away, more so than usual. And of course, they were our 24/7 clients. So we are working on increasing our client base. And some, like I said before, some of our clients are in a different area. So we're recruiting in that area so that we can provide them that. And I think to your point, I think the number of hours that you would require them to work would be dependent upon what you feel comfortable with being able to, sustain. 120 hours, we don't, if they're willing to work part-time, it doesn't take them that long to get it. We do have some that only work part or they work full-time. It doesn't take them long to get it. But if they only work part-time, we extend it. We don't make them have it done within 3 months. So it's based upon what they're able to work, either part-time or full-time. We haven't had much of a problem staffing them once they get out because we have a wait list of about 50 people. Medicaid clients that we are really promoting this program so that when they graduate, we have already done the admissions on the client, and so that they're ready to start right away. Because our Medicaid clients, we can't afford to put our CNAs on those cases because they're paid at a higher rate. So with that wait list, that kind of helps ensure that we can provide hours for them. Does that help, Jillian?
I think, yeah, it's always, it's so hard to match the timing, right, of the hiring of caregivers and having the right cases for them. And it's just a balancing act constantly, because you can lose a great caregiver if you don't have the right case for them. And you can lose a great client if you don't have the right caregiver for them. And that's a business in a nutshell.
It is. And what we do is, before graduation, we have one of our home care staffing coordinators come in and get some information from them as far as where they live, what hours they're looking for, are they okay with pets or whatever. And then they go back and they look at their wait list, and then the nurse goes out and does the initial assessment, and we open that case so that when they graduate, they have that schedule in hand. And I think that's so important. Anytime we do an orientation, we want to have that so that when they leave us that day, they have a client, they have something on their schedule. Because if they leave without it, I feel like you pretty much lost them.
Do you have clients on the waiting list for Medicaid that end up going to other agencies? Like another agency picks them up before you're able to get to them?
Well, good question. There are very few agencies in the area that accept Medicaid, and we all have a wait list. So, you know, if they leave us, they're losing their place in line. And I don't know if, you know, they want to do that. And it's so sad to see how many people are waiting for care. And that list just seems to be growing, and it's heartbreaking. So,
on the national level, on the national level, there needs to be lobbying. This is a problem that's not going away, mm-hmm. and it needs to be addressed. I mean, it's a crisis.
Yes.
Yeah, it's in line with the tsunami of aging mm-hmm. Baby boomers, I think. Yeah, so I think the first of the baby boomers are turning around 70, mid-70s right now, so. But I'm just, one of the things I just wanted to comment on is recently, so one of the things we've done, and this just speaks to kind of the crux of it, I think the crux of the matter, which is getting that kind of engagement with these individuals who have the potential to be great workers, if you can just get them the skills and get them and have that kind of that contact with them. Because, and this has come up before, I know, at other meetings, but bottom line, recently we have, you know, all a majority of our home support workers, we discovered, are not able to access their pay stubs on the system that we've got set up for them to do so. Mm-hmm. And so we've spent hours and hours over the last month and a half, 2 months, getting them all on board with getting registered online. So they have to, you know, they have to set up an account and they have to create a password and all this technology support that we had to go through just to get them all up to speed on this. And I feel like it was a critical, like, we didn't have to do it. Mm-hmm. Obviously it took us a huge amount of time, but the engagement that resulted, you know, really connected us to these workers who were really struggling at the end, you know, the individuals who really needed in-person, step-by-step assistance. I really think it made a difference. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you just shared that. That's great. We have ADT for that portion. And we have the same exact challenge, because what we do is we pay for ADT to mail us the pay statement, and we mail them out, because they deserve and need to, right, see their pay statements. But it was a way to circumvent the problem of their computer literacy and the staff time it would take to get everybody registered. But I'm really glad you said that, because I'm going to bring it back to my team, because the engagement and the personal connection you get when you devote that time to the one-on-one conversations, because you're going to have other conversations along the way while you're walking them through, and that human touch and that bond that you form in a personal conversation is really invaluable. Yeah. I have found that also when I take the time. It's hard to take the time.
It is, yeah. And I mean, it was really tough. We had a handful of people, and between, it took sometimes two, myself and another colleague, a couple of tries trying to, would start with over the phone, and then we'd have to do the in-person visit, and sometimes it would take up to an hour to get something accomplished. So it definitely was time intensive, but well worth the while, I believe.
So I saw that Dr. Will had a question. Did Tatiana, was yours answered?
Yeah, I think Tatiana had a question first.
Is your something new? Okay.
Just quickly, thinking of measuring the success of the program, do you keep touch with the first cohorts? I mean, is there any way to see how successful those first caregivers who were trained in this program, do they keep working? Did their situations improve? Kind of from the grant applications perspective, that would be really great to have this kind of statistics. Do you have any?
I don't have actual numbers in front of me, but we do track them, absolutely. I'm not involved in that tracking process, over the years, some come and go, some go right away, some stay. We had one that left us a few months ago and is back. She came back last week. So I think that they, and we've had others that have moved on to the program, helped them develop their confidence so much that they reached out or they expanded what they wanted to do. And we have somebody, one of our PCAs, she worked with us for a while and then she left for a different type of job. So we are very proud. We hated to lose her, but we are very proud of the change in her confidence and her, fighting for her dream and being, successful. So we hear stories like that all the time and it's heartwarming. And I can see if I can get some statistics for you guys. I think we mentioned it in our annual report, but I'd have to go dig that out. I think some groups are better than others, depending upon the recruitment. I think the first year that we did the East End, we did not have the support of the community health workers. We just kind of recruited ourselves through them. And it was a free for all and anybody could come. We did go through the interview process, but we didn't know them as well as the community health workers. So I feel like that group, we didn't have as great success with as we did once we got the community health workers, hey, help us pick these people, you know them better. So, who is looking for something, and who do you feel has the desire and the drive and the passion and compassion? It was nice to have their assistance in that. But we feel like overall, it's been a very valuable and rewarding program.
Sounds like it certainly has been.
Yeah.
So we do have 10 minutes left. Let's hear what Dr. Will brought something up. We want to make sure that everyone gets their needs.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I don't want to take up everybody's time. I guess for context real quick, everyone's kind of talking about like Jillian, I think you were talking about like the investment with IT. Premier's trying to do something as well, but like we're also investing in IT, offering full benefits for our caregivers, probably have to raise rates, all this other kind of stuff. So if we do this all in the guise to get retention, to what I think the group mentioned, you have to have the business to support the people that are still here. So I've worked now, it's our budget talks, our fiscal year, probably like yours, it starts in July 1. Like we're trying to work basically a full-time recruiter in. I'm curious, do you guys, crux of my question, do you guys have that same investment? Do you have a full-time, probably have a recruiter, I'm sure, for caregivers, but do you have somebody out there like business development sourcing? I'm getting different answers depending on the agency that I talk to. I'm trying to see when I'm having these talks, am I the one saying the moon's made out of cheese here, or is everybody else kind of doing the same thing?
So you're asking if people have someone to go out into the community and get the cases.
Correct. And like a true account executive incentivized, they bring in, let's say they bring in 500 hours a week or something crazy. You know, they're getting a big bonus check, like something like that, where I think traditional sales kind of leans.
I hear you.
The only comment I would have, we don't have that person doing that at all, but we do get steady referrals. Okay. And I, part of that, I'm just saying from personal experience, has been our rapport as a result of our reputation. Right. So the time that we put in, like I was talking about, whether it's contact with the clients or contact with the home support workers, it's that really the caring approach that has enabled us to have an improved reputation over other organizations, I believe, or companies. And as a result, because we strive for consistency and we strive to really put in the time in order to support a worker through the bumps and the hurdles that they can face in the field, or on the other side with client issues, that ultimately it results in consistent referrals. Now, that can change any day, of course, and I'm not the best person to speak to it. If Elaine were here, she'd be able to speak to it more thoroughly in terms of how our organization is set up in Vancouver and our relationships and our community, our extended community. But that's what I would say to that.
Thank you.
In Boca Raton, Dr. Will, you know, we have number one or number two in the nation concentration of the geriatric population, I would say, like in South Palm Beach County alone. So there's so much competition. And like Jillian, it's the name recognition of Jewish Family Services, because we, I guess it was whatever strategic decision of the board to put JFS in the name of our home care agency, because that's always a decision, right? Some of you among our group have unrecognizable, right, unidentifiable names, and that was a strategic decision as well. And we've toyed with having, like, doing business as a secondary marketing technique, because sometimes people think that they shouldn't call us if they're not Jewish. So there's two sides to that coin, right? But to answer your question directly, we recently did hire someone in that capacity, but the structure is a little different. It's not incentivized the way that it would be traditionally, because I think we were worried about rules and regulations regarding that, like paying for a call type of thing.
Sure.
So she's so she's an hourly employee. We started on a part-time basis, and her title is community liaison. And really, it was more for getting, direct networking with professionals in the community, the doctor's offices that hopefully might have an interest in referring to private duty. That's always a challenge for us, because the private duty doesn't seem to be a very important referral point for physicians. But it's, just to network with the facilities and with the doctors. I will say it hasn't proven yet to be really effective
in numbers.
And I was expecting that. Like,
right.
It's more the name recognition and the long-term benefit of having someone out there who has schmoozed and talked and networked with the community to get to those pockets that don't know about us. But it's not like a direct, like, here's a client. And that would be so hard right now. It's part of the conversation we're having, because she can get us a great client, and oh my God, what happens if I don't have the caregiver for them?
It's correct. That's helpful. That's what we're trying to implement. Like I said, our start of our new fiscal year is July 1. So we're trying to put in some things in place now to ramp up business to still bring this person in. My background is more for skilled care and then transition to private duty. So I'm used to having a true account executive, like having them on a tier system, really like get somebody kind of hungry for business. So I want to try it, but I know every market's a little different.
There was some mention before about like recruiting those caregivers. What one of the things that we find is a big challenge is the hours they want to work. So we could have like we have 100 people, let's say, on a payroll right now, and then there's like another 40 that only want nights, let's say.
Yep. Yeah. Like, nights is always big.
I turn clients away every week because it's not the hours.
Turn clients away because you don't have the hours.
We are unable. Yeah, throughout Boca Raton and Delray Beach and Boynton Beach, all agencies are not currently meeting the need. The need exceeds by far the ability of agencies to address it. So I think an entire private market is emerging again by word of mouth and private pay.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, Dr. Will, that your idea to, or Jess's idea to have someone like that is a good one. If you have the capacity to, you know, take care of all of the clients that could come, because you're, you know, if you get your name out there,
yeah, it's not,
will come, I think.
Exactly.
You build it, they will come. If you don't build it, you know, they don't come.
Well, yeah. It's a rebranding thing too, like
Premier rebranding.
Yeah, I mean, just because, like, you know, this program was run, you know, successfully, you know, by someone else for like 22 years, but in full transparency, this is nothing against the previous administration. For the past 5 to 6 years, it's been flat, right? And we get a lot of referrals through word of mouth, which is great. But then that means there's somebody who hasn't heard us. There's somebody that didn't consider us.
You
want to
build
one.
It and you're fresh blood. You know what I mean?
Correct. That's correct.
When new people come in, you know, it's true. It can be very difficult to, you know, do something different every single time because you just don't. But I think it's a good, I think it's a good idea.
Thank you. Definitely. By the time we meet again, hopefully let you know where we're at in that process.
Yes. And what about what's happening in Montreal? What's your program like and how's it going?
It's going, like Ed mentioned, just Dr. Will, I think it is a great idea to have someone doing outreach and marketing and communications, because I used to work for a private agency and we had one specific for that particular need. And it was a success at driving business and bringing business. And to recruit the home care workers, we used to attend prior to COVID, but like job fairs and reach out, right? So we were able to match the need, the influx of the need of the new client. We were able to hire the workers. It sort of matched up. But Montreal is sort of getting back to a new reality with the COVID restrictions being lifted, which has brought some.
Hallelujah.
Yes, it was a long, long haul for all of us. You know, I really don't have a problem of specific recruitment. My big retention, my workers stay with me for many years, because as Jillian mentioned, we definitely do a lot of investment in building the relationships and taking interest in not only their work life, but also their personal life, understanding and respecting boundaries, obviously. But we send out birthday cards every month to the workers, or we just little touches like that make a huge difference. Our big problem is the recruiting of the different languages, because we have a huge French clientele, and the French préposés, like the French home care workers, are going more to the public sector because they have benefits and they get insurance programs and they get tons of hours overtime. So we have a huge wait list of French speaking workers who are waiting for home care because I just cannot find anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really, it's a big issue. I have a significant amount of clients on the wait list because of this need for the French. But other than that, I think it was a very successful couple of years going through the pandemic. It was exhausting and extremely tiring, but I think the Coming Center pivoted beautifully in managing the needs on the social service side and on the programming side. It's actually quite impressive, but I think we're all very tired, to be honest with you. Like, I think it's hitting my team now. We went through the motions for the last years, and now it's just like, it's like that exact,
you're on adrenaline. Everyone
exactly.
was on adrenaline, and now,
I think we're just burnt. Like, we're really tired. So
true.
Yeah.
So how are you dealing with that?
So I've encouraged all my team to take vacations. I have to say the agency has been really, really respectful in recognizing mental health and understanding the need for people to take mental health days. I myself, with my specific team, I have said to them, if you need time off, please take it, do what you need to do, we'll fill in for you. And we've also been very supportive of the home care workers as well. So a lot of them now are asking for vacations and taking time off, and we're letting them go, take the time they need. But I think it's just hitting a collective group all at once.
Mm-hmm. I hear that all across the network.
Yeah.
All, you know, categories of professionals. This is it. People are really, you know, it's the lull before we're getting up again, because you know, everyone, the masks are coming off
right.
in many places. And, you know,
I'm just curious with the new guidelines with everybody, like I know here in Quebec, for example, like there's no more vaccine passport, there's masks are going to be lifted, but are your home care workers still going to be wearing masks in the homes and following all appropriate protocols? Yeah. Okay. I just,
they are
us as well. Okay.
We're not forcing the N95s that those were, those right, off, but the mask need to happen, whether it's, you know,
okay.
Whether it's just, you know, the three ply or what have you, but yeah, we were forcing, that sounds right. We were making the 95s.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. And I, that's not without a huge, enormous amount of difficulty on the part of the home support worker. From my perspective, so I've had questions this week about whether or not they get to stop having to worry about the mask. And I mean, being in the office and not being in the field with them and not doing it myself, I do know how difficult it is if you wear glasses and you have to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And ideally, we're supposed to be wearing face shields too. And to be continuing to ask them to stick with it for the moment is really, really tough. Anyway, I just make that comment.
It's hard.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Well, I want to thank Teresa. Teresa, thank you so much for your generosity in sharing this information with the group. We were looking forward to it. And I think it led to a really good conversation. Our next meeting, I just saw you put it in the chat. Can you say it again?
I said it's on May 19th at 1 p.m.
And if you have any specific suggestions, ideas, questions that you would like to see discussed at that meeting, please email me or Lisa, and we will get it on that agenda.
And Debbie, who is also the co-chair, in the beginning, we forgot.
Right.
She's traveling right now on a plane and didn't realize it was the same day, so she couldn't call in.
This is recorded, you can share it with her. Yeah, and also, it was a bit of a small group today, so Lisa, will you send the recording available so we can share it with people who were not able to make it?
Absolutely, yes.
That would be great. Okay.
Okay, great. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank
all
you for allowing me to speak.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you all.